Welcome to the This Month in Forensics podcast for March 2018. I'm Phil Moore, and here's a few things from the last month that I wanted to talk about. Of course, this isn't everything. The industry puts out a massive amount of content every week. So for everything that I can find, you can head over to thisweekinforensics.com. The first thing I wanted to mention was that the nominations for the Forensic Forecast Awards are almost closed. I've put a link in the show notes, and you've got until the end of the day to nominate This Week in Forensics for Blog of the Year if you find it useful, if you like the content that I put out. There was a bit of discussion about whether it should go under Resource of the Year, but I think that's going to be a really tough fight between mainly DFIR training and About DFIR. So I think I'll let them have that, and really appreciate the nomination for Blog of the Year. But let's get started with the podcast. So there's a couple of software updates or releases that I wanted to mention. So Jason Hale at Digital Forensic Stream has released a new tool called USB Detective, which looks to simplify the analysis of USB device history. So as mentioned in the inaugural post that when he released the software, Windows 10 comes with some interesting challenges for examiners with its regular removal of artifacts. When you, I think whenever an update is done, a major update is done, it clears out a bunch of different event logs, for example, and clears out some stuff in the registry and moves things around. So having a tool that's trying to keep up with that and try and piece the remnants of information back together automatically is quite useful. The previous go-to was Mark Wone's USB Device Forensics, which I think was updated a year ago. So it's good that Jason's picked up this project, as you know, our understanding of Windows 10 is still developing and it's bound to cause problems with us going forward. Cellbrite updated UFED Physical Analyzer, Logical Analyzer, and Cellbrite Reader to version 7.2.1 with a number of improvements and bug fixes, but the real reason that I wanted to mention it was the incorporation of the file format viewer. Not being able to view plists directly in PA has been really annoying for a while, so having it inbuilt now is really, really useful because, you know, iPhones are full of plists, and it also deals with a lot of other different file formats, which would be really cool to play around with. There was lots of talk about registry transaction logs, which apparently have been around for a long time, but never really were being utilized by the operating system, or so we thought. So Dave and Matthew hosted Maxim Suhanov on the Forensic Lunch to talk about his research into registry hives and transaction logs in his YARP library. And the important takeaway is that as of Windows 8.1, Microsoft have been using the transaction logs of the registry more often, and as a result, the most up-to-date information may not be held in the registry files that you are examining, but you also have to incorporate and replay the transaction log files. As a result, Eric Zimmerman also updated all of his registry tools to incorporate replaying back these log files, and Eric has a post explaining what the update what the updates to a huge number of his tools allow them to do. Mark Spencer at Arsenal Consulting shows how not incorporating the registry transaction logs can also lead to incorrect conclusions, as the updates may not be pushed into the Hive transaction logs, from the Hive transaction logs into active Hives for days, which is very interesting. There was also a bit more talk about the BAM key, which was covered last month. As a result, a couple of tools incorporated the researchers' plugins, and a few more people kept playing around with it, and it's something worth looking into if you spend your time looking at program execution artifacts and having just another place to obtain information and correlate that data together. Oleg Skulkin and Igor Mikhailov at Cyber Forensicator tested how various actions affect the timestamps that are found on NTFS volume on a Windows 10 host. So the test showed that there are some minor differences compared with the table that's presented on the SANS poster that they produced for the 4500 course. So this kind of testing is a really low barrier to entry kind of test. If someone's looking for a small project, this is a really simple one that lets you play around with, you know, moving a file, copying a file across different operating system and file system combinations. So it's really good that the guys did this to show that, hey, Windows 10 is causing more problems. Speaking of Windows 10, Jamie Tubbs at Magnet Forensics explains various Windows registry artifacts that have changed. Many of the same examination techniques will still work. However, different activities modify the registry keys, and some of the things that we used to be able to rely on, such as the install date value, have now moved and are a little bit more involved to try and figure out when the operating system was installed, as opposed to in Windows 10, like a major seasonal update, I guess. A major update has occurred, because when you do an update on Windows 10, it will move a lot of the details that we rely on, such as install date, into a different section. I think it's called the Source OS registry key. And so you end up with a series of those, but the one that you would normally look at is actually inaccurate as to when the operating system was installed, as opposed to when the update was installed. It's confusing. So just all this means is you're gonna have to double check that the tool that you're using is aware of the changes, if it's automatically pulling out data for you, which is kind of standard. I'm going to butcher this, but Josue Ferreira has written an article on Forensic Focus on acquiring data from solid state drives using open source tools. And I probably do have to read through this again, because the experiments that were run showed that mounting a drive, that a solid state drive, can cause data to be changed. So there was a process to, established as to how to correctly image a solid state drive. And Maxim also weighed in based on his research earlier, and he's posted a few tweets in a lengthy stream about how you can go about doing this. So I've put that in the show notes. But yeah, solid state drives obviously are going to be more and more prolific, and correctly imaging them is probably something worth looking into. Okay, Sarah Edwards identified a couple of places, mainly the unified log and the install log, where Apple has mistakenly been storing passwords for user-created encrypted APFS volumes. So this isn't the user's login password. It's basically, if I can't recall if it's exactly whether you are creating a new APFS volume, say for example as a disk image or on a USB drive, if you're creating a new one or you're converting an existing one to be encrypted. But Sarah found that it was storing the password in the unified log in free text, so that wasn't great. And as a result, Apple did fix it. I think just recently. There was a fix that went out in High Sierra 10.13.4. But then Sarah also found that the password could also be found in the install.log, and I'm not sure if the update incorporated that. The interesting thing was the install. So the unified logs rotate not very quickly, but much faster than the install log, which apparently is only updated when you do a major update. So, you know, 10, 12, 13, 14. So that probably is once a year, I guess. But it's just something to know about if you are coming across encrypted volumes that users are storing data in, and you're unable to access, say, the keychain if they've stored the password in there. That's just some place to look. Brett Shavers has released the latest iteration of the Windows Forensic Environment training, or WinFE training. And if it's anything like his other training courses, it'll be quite helpful for those that are looking to use WinFE for their work. Christopher Vance at Magnet Forensics explains the new advanced MTP acquisition that's found in Axiom for Samsung devices. So Chris shows how this value was useful for a situation where he's unable to do a board swap or a screen repair on a locked passcode protected device, and he was still able to obtain the media directory, which you know, will have a good amount of data in it that could be useful, you know, your pictures and videos that the user has taken or downloaded. And depending on your case, that might be plenty. And obviously, if you've got no other option and you can only get some data is better than no data. Heather Mihalik at Smarter Forensics searches for Apple Maps data on her various iOS devices. She was doing something similar around Christmas, and I think she decided to do it again over Easter, and she found that the data for Apple Maps was being stored in iCloud, and it wasn't necessarily accessible in the device backups. So it's becoming more and more apparent that devices are storing stuff in the cloud, and it might not be accessible on the device, or you won't be able to extract the data from the device if it's protected or encrypted or just otherwise not backed up. So I guess this can cause things to get legally problematic, because you may have the authority to search the device itself, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you can impersonate the user and pull cloud sources. So it's just something to keep in mind that, you know, you might not be getting all the data if you're just doing a backup, and you may need to look into acquiring cloud information as well to get, you know, as much information as you can. Lastly, there was a lot of talk about a company called Grayshift, that produced the Gray Key, or it might be the other way around, during the month. So they were releasing a small box that's about $15,000 to $30,000, depending on, I guess, the level of access you want. And what that will be doing is allowing, I think it's only being sold to law enforcement, because that's probably rational, but allowing law enforcement to try and brute force iOS devices. So it's a small box that has a couple of lightning cables sticking out of it, and you can plug it in. It puts it into a mode and it tells you how long it's going to take to crack the password. And I think they showed, there was an article where they showed a brand new iPhone X that was up to date, and it was able to be brute forced on stage in a dramatic fashion. So, you know, this is fairly useful. It'd be interesting to see what Apple's response is going to be, whether Apple's able to fix whatever flaw they're exploiting, and how that's going to affect a bunch of law enforcement cases, because obviously, you know, getting through locked devices is very important to solving crime. So it's kind of this interesting kind of balance between security and allowing people that, you know, want to put the bad people away, allowing them to have access or obtain access to locked devices. So yeah, that'll be kind of interesting to see where that ends up and how that keeps going in the future. So that's it for the month. Of course, this isn't everything. So for everything that I've spoken about and more, you can head over to thisweekinforensics.com. I wanted to quickly shout out to my Patreon subscriber patrons. If you get a bit of value out of my work and you want to give a little bit of value back, the link is in this post. It's at the top of the page. I really appreciate the people that have decided they wanted to you know, contribute to my work and you know, encourage me to keep going. The Patreon supporters get the links that I've mentioned in this post, as well as the time codes to make it a bit easier to look it up, the things that I've mentioned. So, you know, I really appreciate all the people that have pledged, and you know, that's pretty much it. I really appreciate it. Lastly, I guess I want to re-mention the Forecast Awards, because, you know, I got nominated last year and it was really exciting, and unfortunately I didn't win. But, you know, it's always an honor to be nominated. But no, it really is. I do appreciate that people get a lot out of the things that I do. Winning would be nice, because, you know, winning is nice. If you've got any suggestions or recommendations, you can let me know. I'm on Twitter. I'm fairly responsive. So I'm at Phil Moore with two L's, but you should be able to find it pretty easily. And special thanks to my friend Jeff, who's Animatic on SoundCloud, for letting me use one of his tracks in the opening. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next month.